New World Order Battle Royale in Ukraine, starring Russia and the American Empire, with VT's Mark Dankoff, host of the Dankoff Report, right here, right now, on
VT Radio. Let's go. With host Johnny Punish.
Okay, we're on with VT's Mark Dankoff. Mark, how you doing?
Good. Hanging in there, just there. On Thanksgiving Eve.
No kidding, right? And I take it you're somewhere in Texas?
I'm in San Antonio, seventh largest city in the country, of course. Military town, USA. It's also the headquarters for the national security agency, Microsoft, International Surveillance of the Internet. So we probably have a bigger audience even now than we might imagine.
I can imagine that. Is that, yes. They have it somewhere on the Riverwalk there somewhere or what?
No, it's not on the Riverwalk. That's getting increasingly unsafe. No, the NSA and Microsoft have their own big complex that's been up for quite a number of years. I've never even driven by it, but you definitely see it in Google search and images and so forth. And again, for whatever reason, the NSA, instead of doing all of this from their Maryland location at Fort Meade, they've got this thing set up in San Antonio, which is also the home of the Air Force's Air Intelligence Agency and who knows who else.
Well, maybe they fell in love with the Alamo or something. Who knows?
That must be it.
Well, let's get right to it. Today I want to discuss with you Russia, Ukraine. Obviously, you're big on this issue. But before we do that, I want you to explain to some of our newer viewers, because we do have a lot of people on Spotify and other places. Why is it this is a big issue? What happened in 2014 that created this monster?
Well, I think in order to understand the bigger picture on this, and at this juncture, it's not simply me saying this. People can look at sources like David Stockman and Pat Buchanan, for example, and see the same information. What we are talking about here is the ongoing advance or the attempted advance of the New World Order against a sovereign country. The United States was involved in the first part of the 21st century in a so-called attempt at an orange revolution in Ukraine in the 2003-2004 timeframe. And then, of course, the big event was in February of 2014 when the Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, Victoria Nuland crowd, basically in conjunction with an assist from the European Union, illegally overthrew the elected government in Kiev, the so-called Yanukovych regime. Whether you like Yanukovych or you don't, he was legitimately elected. And basically, this coup d'etat occurred not only because Vladimir Putin was offering a better trade and banking deal to Ukraine than the EU was, but also because this needs to be seen against the larger backdrop of all of these expansions of NATO, which the United States assured Gorbachev when the Berlin Wall came down and the Soviet Union went out of business, that the United States would never take advantage of this by recruiting former Warsaw Pact countries to join NATO and to start moving NATO ever eastward and ever closer to Russian borders. Well, of course, that promise was grossly violated from the time of the Clinton administration onward. Those ongoing NATO recruitments of former Warsaw Pact countries were clearly designed as a threat to Russia, post-Bolshevik Russia. And at the same time that that was going on, this Ukrainian operation in the southern underbelly of Russia was a part of this bigger picture. That as well as Bill Clinton's illegal use, outlandish use of NATO in 1999 to bomb Serbia, paved the way for the 2014 coup in Kiev with the Newland Clinton Obama Biden cabal. But then in the years that followed, there were 14, 15, 16,000 Russian ethnics that were killed in the so-called Donbass in eastern Ukraine because at that juncture, these Russian-speaking provinces of Lugansk and Donetsk did not want to be part of a CIA-installed government in Kiev, neither did the Crimeans. The Crimeans, by referendum, voted overwhelmingly to rejoin Russia, the United States in NATO, in the EU, in the present regime in Kiev all balked at that idea, of course. And then over time, with all of these killings that were taking place that were largely unpublicized in Western media for obvious reasons, these killings of these Russian ethnics in Donbass, 14, 15, 16,000 of these people, and all of these military operations between 2014 and February of 2022, finally forced, I want to emphasize this, forced Vladimir Putin to intervene in this conflict in Donbass in what was called a special military operation that had limited goals and objectives. At the same time, of course, at Volodymyr Zelensky, our Zio president of Kiev, had indicated that he thought it would be a great idea if we had American nuclear weapons on Russian borders, stationed there in Ukraine. You can imagine going back to 1962 and the Cuban Missile Crisis, where that sort of thing was headed in terms of the fact that in those days they were in our backyard. Incredible. Now, 60 years later, we're in their backyard. And then, of course, this issue of all of these American bio laboratories was subsequently exposed. So it was a cascading series of events. The NATO recruitments in the late 90s that violated the American word to Gorbachev. Then, of course, the color revolution, the orange revolution in Ukraine in 2003, 2004, the coup d'etat in February of 2014. And then finally, excuse me, all these deaths of these ethnic Russians in Lugansk and Donetsk regions, finally, in conjunction with Zelensky's open public statements that there needed to be an American military, a NATO military, and nuclear presence right on the borders of Russia. What other choice did Vladimir Putin have? And that's incredible. What's not being presented, of course, incredible. In the Western media.
Okay, so the next question I have for you very succinctly is, what the heck is going on at the very top of all this? I mean, I honestly want to know, why are we having this massive divide of who controls the world? I mean, what the heck is going on and where is it going?
Well, I've argued, and of course I'm far from alone in this, that this is all an attempt at a world government where the sovereignty of individual nation states is progressively eroded and destroyed, and that this involves a world government with the United States in the cabal that controls the United States government through fiat money and other things. This idea of imposing this on the rest of the world, this includes imposing on the rest of the world our fiat banking system. That was one of the big things, of course, that led to the coup d'etat in February of 2014 in Kiev. It involves, when necessary, overt military threats. It also involves cultural subversion. And this is where, of course, the piece that appeared in Veterans Today, where I wrote a letter to James Risen of The Intercept, comes into play, because this isn't just about fiat money and economic sanctions, the so-called war of attrition that the West is waging on Putin's Russia, which has largely backfired in the West, by the way. Putin's going to make out just fine in this, as it turns out, because they've got the commodities and we don't. But the other issue here is cultural subversion, attempting to impose both in Ukraine through the subversion of the Orthodox Church of Ukraine, which involved an Eastern patriarch in Istanbul by the name of Bartholomew II. And what James Jotrus wrote for Chronicles magazine a few years ago, Jotrus is an Orthodox Christian, used to work for the State Department. He was pointing out that there was a lot of national endowment, NEA money, national endowment, I guess it's in National Endowment for Democracy, NED, which essentially is CIA, if we look at it properly, that we were commissioning this Bartholomew II with a pretty handsome financial payment to intervene in Orthodox Church matters in Ukraine, where he did not even have ecclesiastical jurisdiction, in order to divide the Orthodox Church in Ukraine, which historically had been under the complete authority of the Russian Orthodox Patriarch Kirill in Moscow. So you can see it was divide and conquer and trying to subvert the unity of the Orthodox Church. The other thing that Bartholomew II was hitting at is that the Orthodox Church in Ukraine needed to be more LGBTQ friendly than had historically been the case. And this is where we start getting into issues of cultural subversion related to NGOs affiliated with people like George Soros, of course, the Open Society Foundation. We start getting into the larger picture of Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum and how these types of globalist organizations are using a cultural subversion of Christian cultures in order to achieve, in conjunction with economic sanctions, in conjunction with military threats, in conjunction with ongoing admissions from time to time that our operation in Ukraine, the American operation, the EU operation, the NATO operation in Ukraine, is designed ultimately to achieve quote-unquote regime change in Russia. Well, obviously, in terms of serious American national security concerns based on an understanding of our own sovereignty and getting away from this globalist picture for a moment, this is clearly all none of our business. We are playing with fire. And frankly, what the Western media is not discussing is the fact that its terrible coverage of what's actually going on in that country fails to properly inform the American people that the $65 billion that we have already poured into Ukraine, almost as much as the entire defense budget of Russia in a year's time, is being accompanied by billions of dollars more. I think in the wake of the off-year elections, that Biden thinks he will be successful in getting at least another $37 billion approved for Ukraine in the next Congress, if not this one. And then, of course, we're ongoingly reading about American and European arms transfers to that country. The bad news is this: Putin is winning the war of attrition. Russia and China are back together in the sense that Russia controls the commodities. China has the manufacturing juggernaut, and they're both nuclear powers, and they have terrifically large conventional and nuclear forces, and that the West is here biting off more than it can chew. I mean, I'm amazed after the miserable outcomes for the American discretionary wars in Bush's war on terror, which later became Obama's war on terror and Biden's war on terror, that in all of this, leading up to the disastrous American defeat in Afghanistan, that anyone believes that an American military that historically has lost all kinds of wars of attrition after the end of the Second World War, believes that it's at this stage of its history that it's going to come up against a Russian-Chinese economic and military alliance that I think when all is said and done will at least involve Iran as a third leg in that triad. And this whole thing is going badly enough that the Saudi Arabians, whose agreement with Nixon and Kissinger on the petrodollar as a substitution for the American dollar that at one time had been backed by gold, that if the Saudi Arabians join the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa economic alliance, this is going to produce a catastrophic defeat for the American empire. That's not necessarily bad news, by the way. It may well be that when the American empire finally goes down, that as dangerous as that will be at one level, that ultimately those of us who believe in the old American republic and gaining control of our own monetary system and gaining control of our southern border and regaining control of our culture and staying out of other people's business where we have no right to intervene, this could turn out to be a win situation for all of the populists and nationalists who read and consult veterans
today.
That's
an amazing explanation. I'm speechless. I mean, I don't even know where it goes from here. I want to know what you think in 10 years from now, we look back at this time, what do you think actually is going to happen? What is it going to be like?
Well, that's assuming we're still here. You know, there are credible discussions among really bright people, far more bright and far more informed than I am. Philip Giraldi, the ex-CIA station chief, for example, the head of the Council for the National Interest, analyst par excellence. His latest article in the UNS Review suggests that we're going to be in a third world war if we don't pull the plug on this Zelensky nonsense rather quickly. So assuming that we haven't been turned into glass 10 years from now, it's definitely going to be a very, very turbulent situation. But at the same time, if World War III and nuclear apocalypse don't take place, it could well be that with the absolute collapse that I see coming for what Don Wassel of the Freedom Times and the American Freedom News refers to, and others refer to as global homo, meaning global homogeneity under the thumb of this New World Order cabal, that this cabal is going to run out of manpower. It's going to run out of money. It's losing both a military and an economic war of attrition with Putin's Russia in Ukraine at the same time that the Chinese and the Iranians and Putin have had a lot of excellent consultations in regard to what their next moves are going to be if there's absolutely no sanity coming forth out of Washington and Brussels. So with that in mind, I think one of two possibilities exists. One is nuclear apocalypse, which as a Christian, and I know that many of our listeners and readers are not Christians, I'm not trying to evangelize anyone today, but as a Christian who has studied Christian eschatology at the graduate level in the original languages, I certainly believe in the second advent of Jesus Christ at the end of history. And in this particular case, if that is delayed in God's providence from the Christian point of view, and if we haven't been turned into nuclear glass by that time, we might be waking up to a situation again where there's a silver lining in all of this. The American empire goes out of business. We regain control of our house as an American people with a constitution, return monetary policy to our Congress, get rid of the Federal Reserve Board, get rid of these lobbies that control the American media. I'm thinking of one in particular, of course, and get back to honest, fair elections in this country where we're not treated to these circuses that have been introduced in recent years by rigged voting machines and all manner of thing, including what has now happened in this latest situation, not simply in terms of the 2020 American presidential election, but these latest shenanigans in Maricopa County in Arizona, these latest shenanigans that have apparently taken place in Pennsylvania, some of which have already been admitted by a Democrat attorney general of the state of Pennsylvania, who is embarrassed apparently about some of this stuff. We can regain control of our whole own house by doing what the Russians have done. That is boot people like George Soros and the Open Society Foundation and his NGO to eliminate this from the American political scheme and stop people like Soros from buying into elections in this country, particularly where he is deliberately financing the election of leftist globalist district attorneys in major cities in the United States. And San Antonio is but one example of that, where you have a Soros-financed DA in Bear County who is quite happy to have a different view of enforcing the laws of the state of Texas than he should have if he were a legitimate nationalist. So it may well be with all of the turbulence that is coming, and this, of course, could well include food and water shortages, both in the United States and elsewhere, that if you watch what's happening in Europe and what's happening in places like Austria with the rise of the Freedom Party and the rise of nationalism in Italy, and the fact that although it's not where I necessarily want it to be, the alternative for Deutschland, Land people in Germany, which is the most nationalistic party there that's allowed, they seem to be picking up some electoral steam. And last but not least, with the absolute mess that the cabal has made in Britain, that I think think in terms of the British people, with all of this immigration that is taking place to Britain and throughout Europe, where traditional European peoples are being threatened demographically, politically, and economically, when they see what this globo-homo surrogate war that the United States and the EU and NATO and the cabal have been waging using Zelensky in Ukraine, at some point it's got to come to a head. When people are hungry, when people are thirsty, when their currency becomes worthless, when they see all kinds of people in their communities that have no resemblance to what they grew up with, no resemblance to what their forefathers knew in the United States, it may well be a time for action where it won't simply be a catastrophic defeat for global homo in Ukraine, which is what I think is coming as early as potentially January, once General Surovikin has everything in place to begin his big offensive. But the other thing is, those of us nationalists in America and in Canada and in Australia and in the Western world generally, global homo and its cabal minions may discover that they are going to have not thousands but millions of angry people coming after them in regard to how did you let this happen and for what. So that could be a very, very positive thing. But even if it turns out well for us 10 years from now as American populists and nationalists who want to stay out of other people's business and rebuild and regain our own culture and our own demographics and our own money and our own communities, it's still going to be turbulent. It's whether it's an apocalypse in terms of World War III, or whether it's simply something that eventually defeats global homo, but where there's just an incredible lot of tragedy in these next 10 years, it's going to be interesting.
I want to pivot now because yesterday was the anniversary of JFK's assassination, November 22nd. Today's the 23rd for those people listening today. I know you covered that extensively, and it's been about 59 years, correct?
59 years ago, and 59 years ago, in the Veterans Today Post, shows a picture of me taken in November of 1963. I can verify that not only because it was in that school year when my dad was at the Air War College at Maxwell Air Force Base, but also my mother had written in her own handwriting November 1963 on the back of that photograph. But 59 years ago, I was an 8-year-old kid living in George Wallace's Alabama just for 1 year in between Sacramento, right, California, and Hawaii. Kind of a weird cultural experience. But nonetheless, 1963, as we all know, is a fateful time in American history. And to me, the Kennedy assassination, I'm not being braggadocious here, I hope, but I have read probably over many, many, many years all of the best books and articles on this subject, going back to when I was a boy, and in 1966, read Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment, 1967, Josiah Thompson's 6 Seconds in Dallas. And because my father was acquainted with Kennedy, because my father was involved in the Air Force organization that was running U-2 flights over Cuba at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, my father also knew Kurt LeMay, who was then Air Force Chief of Staff and the father of the Strategic Air Command. There was, as a boy, kind of a strange personal connection between myself and John Kennedy, although I never met him, and a strange connection between myself and Curtis LeMay, which is kind of humorous because they both hated each other. But nonetheless, when I go back to all of this as a boy, we now understand things about what happened and who was involved that I could not have imagined at the age of eight, but even at the age of eight, when I was watching live television and Jack Ruby, whose real name was Jakob Rubinstein, and Jakob Rubinstein was a part of the Sonneborn Institute, based here in Texas, by the way, which was running guns to the Zionist underground in the late 1940s. And of course, Ruby had links both to Meyer Lansky and to Sam Giancana in Chicago and Johnny Roselli and Santos Traficante and all of these other names that come up in any legitimate analysis of what was clearly the conspiracy to murder John Kennedy. From the time I knew at the age of 8 there was something wrong with this, to the time all these years later when Michael Collins Piper's final judgment gave me what I think was kind of the tying up of a number of loose ends as to who was really behind this at the apex of the plot. But nonetheless, going over the course of these next 59 years, coup d'etats have continued. Murders have continued clandestinely, both in the United States and elsewhere, that have never been properly investigated. And I think, you know, just looking at such strange events as the Vince Foster death and Ron Brown's plane crash in 1996, and the Seth Rich death in that was never explained in terms of why this should be seen as a robbery. When he was shot in the back and nothing was taken off of his body, and he would seem to be the best known link between a hard drive that he apparently took out of Democratic National Committee headquarters and that he is believed to have turned over to Assange of WikiLeaks. This may have a lot more to do with his death, in fact. On July 10th of that year, in this election of 2016, which is also my birthday, so I remember the date. But these are the kinds of things that all these years later, we are a much bigger police state than we were at the time that President Kennedy was murdered. We have had so many international tragedies since his death that, you know, we could sit here and talk about each of these episodes for hours and hours and hours. But the long and the short of it is that what began in 1950 or 1963 in earnest, 59 years later, has those of us who are real American populists and nationalists with a great sense of foreboding as to what's happened to our country demographically, what's happened to us culturally and economically, and again, the ongoing involvement of this country's military in these illegitimate discretionary wars on behalf of global homo and world government where we do not belong. And I think that has a lot to do
on that
with
note,
really happening with President
before
Kennedy.
We get going, I want you to tell our viewers and listeners, you know, what's going on with you this week? What are you looking at? What's happening with the Dankoff Report? Tell us all about your stuff that's going on.
Well, people can see the Dankoff Report. You know, I'm back with my old network, Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN again. Used to be on there for the breakfast show 5 days a week. They have asked me to come back to do the Dankoff Report on Friday afternoons at 2 p.m. Central Time. People can see those live or they can watch them in the archives thereafter. The London version of the Dankoff Report, which is produced by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock in London, that's an interesting thing because that tends to also involved Dr. Patrick Slattery, my old sidekick at National Bugle Radio at RBN. That particular show is seen not simply at ACH's website and by Rents Radio. RBN has picked that up. Eurofolk Radio has picked that up. Dave Gaharie's got a new and very fine radio station called Free Speech Radio has picked that up. That probably is carried by more alt-right outlets than any other electronic radio show extant, although ACH and I have said that advisedly. There might be some situation out there we're not aware of, but that's the way it certainly looks. And then my work with Press TV Iran, Tasnim News Agency and Tehran Times of Iran, as well as things I do with more frequency now for the Russians with Sputnik News.
Okay, we'll put some links be out there on an ongoing for the YouTube basis. Post here and for the other ones on Rumble. We'll put some links for all your stuff. So viewers, pay attention to the links at the bottom of this and don't forget to subscribe and all that stuff. So
the NSA here in San Antonio loves reading this
hope
stuff.
They enjoy it. Hey, well, and do me a favor for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
You got a big
thank
plan
you,
for
Johnny.
The family this weekend, or what's going on?
Well, tonight, Thanksgiving Eve, I'm taking my mother, who's still quite with it at 101. We're going out to Cross of Christ Lutheran Church in Universal City near Randolph Air Force Base. That's a Wisconsin Synod Lutheran Church. We're going out there for a potluck and then for a worship service. And then tomorrow, we'll be spending some time with my wife's family. I married into a family of Colombian Americans, so Spanish is understood in that household. When my mother and I are together, if we don't speak in English, which we always do, it would be a smattering of German. But that's kind of what's planned this weekend. Plus, losing my diet completely. I've lost 30 pounds over time. I look better.
Take it easy. Thank
you, Sean. Probably gain 15 back this weekend.
And hope you have a nice weekend for the family. Okay.
Danke.
God bless.
If you enjoyed this presentation, hit the like button now. Also, share it with your friends. And don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode.
VT approves this message.